doctor!
You're listening to Pieces of Eighth, a new Doctor Who podcast totally dedicated to the many and varied adventures of the eighth incarnation of that dashing Time Lord.
Each week, we'll be casting our ears, and in many cases eyes, over the adventures featuring Paul McGann's Doctor. My name's Kenny Smith.
And I'm Rebecca Chapman. We're going to be talking all things McGann, whether it's his fleeting appearances on our screens, or his many adventures in books, novellas, full cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, or anything else. This week, we're going to be discussing an eighth Doctor story, A Matter of Life and Death, a five-part comic strip story published by Titan in 2016.
Here, the Doctor is shocked to find one of his old houses on Earth has been taken over by a young artist, Josie Day, whose paintings are coming to life. The search for the truth behind Josie's powers sends the pair on a quest through space and time. For a shattering test of faith in a civil war to a creepy Victorian magic show, a cursed stately home, and a final revelation in the stars.
Today, to tell us how the whole thing came about, we're joined by two guests. So let's meet our first one.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name's George Mann. I'm a writer, worked quite extensively on Doctor Who, from the War Doctor novel Engines of War through lots of different Doctor Who comics, short stories and audios, as well as creating Newbery and Hobbs, Ghost of Manhattan, and a few other ongoing stories and novel series, and recently some Star Wars as well.
Excellent.
So George, how did you discover the Eighth Doctor, as it were?
Discover the Eighth Doctor? Well, I mean, I was a huge fan as a kid of classic Doctor Who. So for me, the Eighth Doctor's return, you know, when it came back to the telly and when that first aired, I was there waiting with a bag of sweets, anxiously, you know, waiting to watch and enjoy it, and loved every minute of it, and watched it again and again on VHS and that I'd recorded off the telly. So yeah, so I was a huge fan of the Eighth Doctor when it hit. I'd always liked Paul McGann anyway as an actor, but it was obviously a very different interpretation of Doctor Who, but I saw in Paul McGann the Doctor. There are some actors who just embody the Doctors, like channeling lightning, I think, and McGann did that for me. And I kind of stuck with his Doctor over the years, and I was like kind of, you know, at the front of the queue to buy the first Big Finish Eighth Doctor audios when he made his triumphant return. I read a lot of the Eighth Doctor novels that the BBC were putting out as well. So, yeah, for me, McGann has never gone away as the Doctor. And then to see him appear again in modern Doctor Who in that kind of short prequel film was just amazing. And that's, it is in that really that the genesis of the Eighth Doctor comic came from, really. Seeing him make that return to TV and seeing that different version of the Eighth Doctor that he was playing, that kind of world-weary version, was really inspirational.
Definitely.
I was working with Titan on some Sherlock Holmes books, and they were publishing my original fiction, Newbery Hobbs. And we'd actually talked about doing a Newbery Hobbs comic before the Eighth Doctor, because the Eighth Doctor comics were my first published comics. And now I've written quite a lot of comics, and I love comics, and again, it's another part of my childhood. But I'd already been talking to them about doing Newbery Hobbs comics, which did eventually happen, but not for a long time. I'd written the War Doctor novel, Engines of War. So the guys at Titan knew that I was really invested in Doctor Who as a property and as characters, and that I wanted to write comics. So it seemed a logical thing when they kind of got the Doctor Who license to say, do you want to write some Doctor Who comics? What happened really, we talked about, we were given a choice, kind of which Doctor do you want to pitch for? And I pitched for the Eighth Doctor for all the reasons, you know, I've already stated, is like the Eighth Doctor. But partly because, you know, we'd just seen him come back onto the telly, and I was intrigued by this kind of weary version of the Eighth Doctor who was kind of trying to avoid the Time War, basically. And that was kind of my pitch. I said, well, I want to do a comic series that feels like it's a missing season of McGann, but late McGann. Not quite at the point where he's heading into becoming the War Doctor, but when the Time War's is raging and he's trying to ignore it because he doesn't want to involve himself. And I know, obviously, things have changed in McGann's timeline, and the Big Finish are now doing kind of Time War stories with Paul McGann. But at the time, we were very much approaching it as a, you know, he's being the Doctor to his core, and he doesn't believe in the war, and he doesn't want to fight the war. And it takes that change in him, literally, that regeneration, to become the War Doctor, to then go and fight the war. So I kind of went, well, I'm interested in doing a Doctor who's still trying to be the Doctor in a universe that's changing around him and is in conflict around him. And that's kind of how we pitched this series. And Titan kind of went, yeah, great, let's do that. And thankfully, the BBC agreed.
Was there anything specific that Titan wanted in the brief that you were handed? Because I imagine that there'd be certain things that they would say, yeah, we want this, but perhaps maybe not so much of that.
Not really. They were actually really flexible about it. I mean, we couldn't use the Daleks because obviously it's a separate license, which Titan didn't have at the time. We talked a lot about companions and we decided we needed to use a new companion, right, and which happened in a lot of the Titan comics for ease. But also because then it wasn't trying to license something back from Big Finish or, you know, work out different characters from the TV. But also it meant we were kind of free to tell a story where no one knows what's going to happen to the companion, that they don't have plot armor in the sense of kind of, you know, we know that they're going to be okay in 12 episodes time. So actually there's no peril. Well, actually creating a new companion allows you to have that peril. So kind of that was part of that formed part of the brief during the discussions. But really, they were really open to it. I mean, I came at it and kind of went, right, if this is my chance to write a season of Doctor Who, I've only got 5 issues. I want to do a Village Under Siege story, and I want to do a Far Future story. I want to do a kind of locked room mystery or big house type story, a Victorian kind of era story, because that's one of my passions. And that's kind of where it came from, really. I kind of set out these stories. And I think everyone thought I was a bit mad, because what a lot of the writers were doing was like, we've got 5 issues, we'll do a 2-part story and a 3-part story. Because, you know, 20 pages of a comic isn't a lot of real estate to tell a story. And I kind of went, I'm going to try and do a complete episode in every issue. And I got quite a few sidelong glances from people. And, you know, and I did learn from, I mean, as I mentioned in the first comics I wrote, that obviously the more space you've got, the more kind of depth you can go into in a story in comics. But at the same time, I kind of tried to plot it so you had the kind of monster of the week, but actually it was all still building towards a big arc that was based around the character and the companion, Josie. This idea that it is actually all one story, but it's got changes of setting and scene and different enemies along the way. That was kind of where I ended up. And the other part of the brief was Titan already had Emma on board to draw it, which was amazing to me. You know, Emma's hugely talented and she did an amazing job with these comics. Again, very different look for Doctor Who comics. Emma's got quite a distinctive style of her own and maintained it throughout, which I think is fab. You know, we worked together to talk through the look and feel of the characters and things, but really Emma was the one who brought Josie's appearance to life. She's the one who designed what she looked like. I can't remember now because it's a little while ago, but I'd kind of fired a few actresses to Emma and said, these are the sorts of kind of things. And then it came back with Josie as she is here and she was fully formed. I was like, Josie doesn't look like any of those actresses, but she's amazing. You know, Emma, you've done, you know, a fantastic job here. And I think it was her idea as well throughout the story, because it's a story of Josie finding out who she is. It's a kind of a story about identity. It was Emma's idea to have her almost take on the Doctor's identity throughout at first, while she's still, she kind of latches onto him. And if you look at her outfits during the course of the comics, by the time you reach, I think, the final issue, she's almost wearing a Doctor's outfit. You know, she's got like a long-tailed coat and a waistcoat. And that was kind of Emma going, you know, this is someone who's searching for their identity and hasn't found it yet, but has latched onto this wonderful character who's rolled into her life and kind of swept her away. And she wants to be like him because she doesn't know who she is. And it's only during the course of kind of the story that she starts to learn that.
Yeah.
So that was a brilliant experience working with Emma to bring Josie to life that way.
Yeah. Obviously, we know that writing a comic strip has to be slightly different to writing an audio script or a prose. But how would you say it compares?
It's closer to audio than it is to prose, in that you're thinking in terms of scenes, but you're obviously thinking visually. So it's probably closer still to a TV script than it is to audio in that sense. But at the same time, kind of one of the early things I learned about writing comics, which I kind of still always try and apply now, is that you don't write the action. A comic book is a series of stills. So you show the cause and effect of a scene. So for example, if one character is going to punch another, you don't write the punch, you write the fist going back, and then you write the person reeling. And the action is implied between the panels. So that was quite an interesting kind of thing to learn. And, you know, the other learning curve was about how much room you've got for dialogue in each panel where you've got to work with the artist to make sure you're leaving them breathing room to tell the story visually. And I think it's one of the first kind of major collaborations that I'd done as a writer. You know, writing novels, it's a very personal experience. You sit in your room and you tap away for months, and then you've got a book at the end of it, and, you know, an editor helps you bring the best version of that book to life. But with a comic, you don't write the script for the end user. You write the script for the artist, and then the artist interprets the script visually. So it's very much a meeting of minds and a meeting of creative kind of energy. So that was an interesting thing to learn. It's like, you don't always get your way, but often you get something better because the artist is the one who thinks visually, and they'll know what's going to work best on the page. But one of the things I've tried to do over the years with comics since this, and kind of it starts in this book, is to write for the medium that you're writing for. Not, you know, I don't want to pretend, for everything I said about kind of I want to give McGann a season, I wasn't writing TV and I wasn't writing audio and I wasn't writing prose. And so you try and think, well, what can you do in a comic book that you can only do in comics, and try and bring that to it? And I think that's something that I kind of started to apply probably a bit later in the Doctor Who comics, really, when I started doing I did a run on the 12th Doctor, and we started to really think about kind of how can you use the white space between panels on a page, and how can you, you know, think the fourth wall is a different thing, really, in a comic, because you can break the art. You can do, you know, in one of the 12th Doctor comics, we have a 3D map of a theme park with a chase, and that's the chase sequence, because you show it, and then you show the dotted lines of where everyone's running, and you can do things like that. Or a car chase that takes place in the white space between panels. And really working with Emma taught me a lot about that sort of thing, coming from mainly prose. I've now written over 100 comics, so, you know, this was the kind of the groundwork for that.
How did you enjoy creating Josie? You've mentioned a bit about how she came about, but what made you go with her background as an artist? It just seems to be the perfect fit with the story.
Thanks, yeah. It's that whole kind of art is life and life is art and art imitates life, and kind of wanted to play with that idea. So the thought of having a character who is a living piece of artwork, since, I mean, it's a spoiler, but the book's been out for a long time. Yeah, so I mean, Josie is a piece of artwork that's kind of brought to life and essentially copy. But yeah, it was that kind of thing that lodged in my head, as art imitates life. And you go, well, actually, what if life imitates art? And you play it around the other way, and you loop it, and the idea of, you know, you can do kind of the search for identity stories through clones, for example, or people who've had amnesia episodes, or, you know, and that's something it's always interested me, that kind of finding my place in the universe type story. And I think it works really well for a Doctor Who companion as well, because the palette of the universe is a lot wider in Doctor Who than it is in real life, because you can go off and do different things and put them into different situations. I knew I wanted to tell that type of story. I knew I had that thing lodged in my head about art imitates life, and I had the idea of the Welsh cottage, because I really wanted to revisit that, because that first appeared in the third Doctor strips in TV Action Countdown. And I kind of thought, as far as I'm aware, no one had gone back to that cottage ever. And I thought, right, okay, well, we know the Eighth Doctor's a reader, because we see that at the end of his story, where he sits down and picks up the time machine again. And I thought, well, I'd done a very, very short 12th Doctor story. There's a one-shot before this came out about the kind of Jane Eyre and Charlotte Bronte. I kind of thought, well, I can link that slightly and go, well, the Doctor's looking for his copy of Jane Eyre, and he thinks the third Doctor's, you know, incarnation left it in the cottage. So we go, I'll pop back to the cottage and pick up my copy of Jane Eyre, because I want to read it. And that's when he finds Josie squatting. And again, I was thinking, you know, a student type who is living in a rural setting, artistic, squatting. And then there's a mystery, and that gives me the village under siege story that I wanted to play with as well. So it all kind of came together out of those threads, really. Just like any story that I work on, I start with kind of just making notes of different things, elements, and then I see how those elements tie together. And often, you know, I'll lose some along the way, but often I'll end up with a kind of core of these ideas. And that's where kind of Josie came from, really. A mix of the story elements that I wanted to introduce and the character elements and character story that I wanted to tell.
Yeah, so as you said, like, each part was like almost like an episode for you.
Yeah.
Was the distinct setting a deliberate move in each part? I mean, or was it just how it went as it went along?
Yeah, no, it was very deliberate. So I planned and pitched the whole kind of five episode arc before writing any of it. So it was very much kind of, because I mean, that's what you often have to do with Doctor Who anyway, to be able to show it to the BBC to make sure it fits with their plans and it gets approved. But in doing so, I kind of can say, I went, well, I want to do a Village Under Siege story. So, you know, because it's a classic Doctor Who trope, of course, but it's a thing that's kind of, for people kind of my age who grew up with those stories, some of those are touchstone stories, Android Invasion and Devil's End. And so I kind of went, well, I want to do a story like that. And I knew I wanted to do a kind of Victorian story, but I wanted to get outside of London. So that's why we did the Edinburgh story with the mirrors. And I knew I needed to do a kind of deep space story, kind of to get the resurrection barge at the end in the far future, kind of country house story, Briarwood. And then I wanted to do a story where we test the Doctor kind of by putting him into a war zone, really. And that's the issue two. I need a little self-contained war story that Josie can help solve, because the Doctor is so kind of, it's almost like a PTSD thing for him. He's like, no, like everywhere I go, everyone's fighting, and I don't want to face this. And Josie's like, well, come on, we've got to solve this problem, you know. And it, for me, you know, I had in the back of my mind, what's the thing that's going to set the Doctor on the path to becoming the War Doctor and actually having to face up to the responsibilities, I suppose. And I kind of thought, well, maybe Josie's one of those triggers for him. So I wanted to do a war story and with a distinct setting as well. So that's kind of where I kind of ended up. And I had a few others as well, because, you know, of course you go, well, I'll throw 10 at the wall and see which ones stick. And I'd always hoped, you know, we might be able to go back and do more, but it hasn't been the case, unfortunately. But yeah, that was the plan from the outset.
Obviously, you worked with Emma with doing the artwork and the script and everything else. But how closely did you work with Emma while she was doing the artwork, as it were?
So the kind of process, and I think this is pretty typical of comics, is I would write the script. The script would then go through the editor, Andrew James, at the time. He'd give me feedback and notes. I would then make amendments. That would then go to the BBC for approval. Once we had an approved script, the approved script goes to Emma. Emma then has a certain amount of leeway to interpret that script into art, because obviously it's not a straightforward process. She doesn't just draw what I've written. She kind of directs it, essentially. But within the confines of kind of, it's the approved story and the approved outline, so it needs to kind of maintain as close as possible to that. So what Emma would then do is sketch roughs, thumbnails that they tend to be called, she'd sketch roughs of each page and send them through to me and Andrew and say, this is where I'm heading with these pages. Does this look like it's working? And when there might have been a significant page where I'd said, you know, this is going to be a double page spread with these things going on, and Emma might come back and go, I think it's going to work better as two separate pages. She'd maybe draw both options and go, right, what do you think? I mean, inevitably we'd end up going with what Emma was suggesting. And she would put in little things as well, like little close-up facial reactions or things. So I'd have like panels telling the story, and Emma would go, well, we need the character moments in here as well. So she'd put in little kind of panels of extra of a thing. So she'd send those roughs through. We'd then go back to her with any suggestions on the roughs. Emma would then draw them up and ink them. She'd usually show us at that stage as well. And then when it was all working really smoothly, what would happen then, Andrew would get the lettering done over Emma's inks while Emma was doing the colouring. So then I had a chance to review the lettering, and if there were any tweaks in the way the art flowed compared to the script, I could then change the dialogue slightly or say this bubble needs to move to there, and we'd move things around so we do a lettering pass. So it's quite a complicated, lengthy process. Then Emma's finished art comes in and it all gets composited into a final thing, and we all do a final review, make sure we haven't missed anything, and then off to print. And that would be the case for each issue on a monthly kind of rolling schedule.
George, I noticed there's some lovely wee bits in the artwork where you get to see the back of a Cyberman head, the back of an Ice Warrior, the bit of a slightly changed Croton. Did you put those in, or was that Emma's?
A bit of both. So, yeah, quite often I'd put, particularly in that first issue where we're in the house and you've got and the bits of artwork and things, I was saying kind of, can we put this in, can we put that in? But, yeah, Emma would put Easter eggs in as well. So it's a bit of both on that front.
I'm just going to quote some of the reviews because it gets such a positive reaction at the time. So please don't let your ego get too infected.
That's hard to hear.
George Mann easily matches Stephen Moffat as a writer from My Geeky Ways. The Adventures of the Eighth Doctor are a welcome addition to Titan's line from Comic Buzz. Snap Powell said, What George Mann has delivered is simply fascinating. He's managed to embrace the spirit of the Eighth Doctor beautifully. And Flickering Myth said, Mann doesn't disappoint his reader, giving an authentic McGann voice Doctor his reins and letting him new who it up a little. That must have been really, really good to know that all the work and the effort you put in did go down so well.
Oh, it was amazing, yeah. And that's an interesting thing about the voice, because the thing that helped most with that actually was listening to the audios, the big finished audios, and listening to his speech patterns and then trying to replicate that with punctuation in the actual speech bubbles.
So yeah, you know, you're standing on the shoulders of giants when you do this sort of stuff. You've got people who've like the actors who and their performance, and the people, the writers who've gone before you in different mediums. So, you know, I think I was delighted that with the reaction with it. I'm very proud of the book, actually. I think, you know, as I said before, you know, I always wanted to go back, and me and Emma kind of were campaigning to do more. But at the same time, I look back at it now, you know, a few years later, and think it's a nice, complete piece of work as it stands. It's, you know, it works as a book in its own right. And yeah, and that thing of kind of touch of New Who, but with classic, I kind of wanted to have one foot in the past and one in the future. It's lovely to hear that people got that from it as well.
Yeah, because Beck is a New Who fan, having come to it that way. But when we were talking about the TV movie in our first episode, pointed out, it's very much, as you say, a foot in both camps.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's actually been, you know, the story of, for me, of most of my Who writing, actually, is this, and particularly Engines of War as well, the War Docs novel, where I wanted it to feel like a movie that had been written between the two series, like between Classic Who and New Who. And you've got elements like, you know, the Death Zone, but then also the kind of the kinetic sense of New Who as well. And I really wanted to do that with this as well. I think that's one of the things I've learned from writing that War Doctor book and having the feedback from people about saying what they liked about it. And I thought, well, I want to apply that to the Eighth Doctor here as well.
You mentioned each issue. George, do you have all the variant covers?
I have all the variant covers of issue one. I don't know if I've got all the variants of everything else. I say I have all of them. I think I have all of them. I know there was a few kind of American store variants, and I don't know that I definitely got them all, but I remember when the first issue came out, I got a box like this from Titan, and they sent me everything that they had at the time. So, yes. Yeah. And I got Emma to do me a sketch cover as well of Josie on one of the blank ones. And we did a signing together at Forbidden Planet, and I kind of slipped it into the pile and said, come on, do me one as well. And she was very kind and did that. So I've got an original Josie as well.
Amazing. And it would be remiss of us not to ask you to give Newbery and Hobbs a wee plug. Where can people find out more about that?
Bits online. Unfortunately, my website is currently being rebuilt at the moment because it got hacked and crashed. And so it's all being rebuilt. So there will be a new website launching soon, which will have lots of information. But in the meantime, the place to start is The Affinity Bridge, which is the first book in the series, or indeed The Undying, if people are comic fans. But there's a graphic novel as well called The Undying, which is a good way of getting into the world. And it's got a very Doctor Who sort of flavour, Newbery and Hobbs. It's heavily influenced by Doctor Who, Hammer Horror, Sherlock Holmes, really. Kind of a mashup of those three things. Newbery and Veronica are kind of crown investigators working for Queen Victoria, but it's an alternative 1902. The Queen's been kept alive on a kind of primitive life support, steampunk life support system in a throne. And Newbery and Veronica are tasked with sorting out all the kind of strange or occult mysteries that are threats against the Empire. Good rollicking fun, hopefully.
Sounds.
I will definitely be buying it.
Thank you.
Brilliant. George, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for being the very, very first ever guest on Pieces of Eight.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Well, that's nice to know. And thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
During our chat with George, we mentioned the fantastic artist on A Matter of Life and Death, who has worked on such comics such as Gem and Young Avengers. So let's hear from her now.
Hello, I am Emma Vicelli, and I was lucky enough to join George Mann and be the artist on A Matter of Life and Death, the Eighth Doctor miniseries from Titan Comic.
So, Emma, how did you discover the Eighth Doctor?
Oh, what was my first discovery? Well, probably the film, to be honest, like a lot of people. to be fair, I'd probably discovered Paul McGann before I discovered the Eighth Doctor. So that helped. What's interesting now, and what we'll probably talk about later anyway, is that the Doctor is now not Paul McGann to me anymore. It's his own. But when I first saw the film, at that point, I would have been like, oh, it's that guy from Withnail and I. How cool. He's Doctor Who. And I actually, I know there's a lot of mixed opinions about that movie, but I really liked it. It was cheesy. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. Then skip forward to the however many minutes they did of that Night of the Doctor, like 11 minutes of perfection, which changed everything. And suddenly I was like, oh, he's gone from being like a little bit of foppish fun to one of the most interesting Doctors ever. Just where he sits in the timeline. I was in the camp, RIP and respect John Hurt, but I was in the camp who would have loved to see Paul McGann take on the War Doctor personally. And then that was when I started listening to the Big Finish audios. So yeah, by then there was a period of time where I was, before working on the comic, where I was just listening to the audios a lot while I was working, because I can do that while I'm inking. And yeah, he was just firmly my Doctor, I think. And oddly, someone who I, because of him primarily being through the audios for me, it was sort of made him more real somehow, because it took it away from it being an actor playing the Doctor, and it was just, yeah, it was there, it was real. You could immerse in those Big Finish stories in a way that, not that I'm saying I couldn't with a TV show, but there's something special about having the story in your head, I think.
Definitely.
Do you have a favourite of the audios you've heard?
Dark Eyes, yes, was the one that stood out the most, I think.
How did the commission to work on this miniseries come about, Emma?
So how did it come about? I think largely thanks to Steve White, actually, who at the time was the managing editor at Titan. And I mean, I'd kind of, comics is a small scene, and I was quite friendly with him anyway. And I can remember one particular point we were chatting, and it would have been a convention, like having a drink afterwards. We'd not really talked about Doctor Who before, but something had come up, and I think we were talking about Peter Davison or something, because before, I think he would be my second favourite up there. And so we were talking about that and the designs and things. And then Steve, just out of nowhere, said, so if you could draw one of the Doctors, which one would it be? And this was at the point when Tennant had just jumped in, I think. So obviously it was having a big resurgence and it was already popular. And I took the absolutely modish, not very popular opinion. I was like, oh, it would have to be the Eighth Doctor. And I think he was quite surprised at that, which I didn't even need to think twice about it. I was like, there's no question of who I would want to draw. And yeah, so he didn't, at that point, he didn't say, oh, well, actually, we're thinking of commissioning one. He just kind of went, oh, interesting. And then the next thing, they came back and were like, well, actually, we're thinking maybe we'll do a miniseries and George is going to write it. And so I think, who knows how differently it would have gone if I'd chosen a different Doctor at the time. They were producing so many good Who titles. But yeah, maybe I surprised him by choosing one who's not been visualised as often. So it gave us a fantastic opportunity.
What did the brief look like that you were handed by Titan in terms of like style and look they wanted? For example, did you choose the Night of the Doctor look, or were you asked to use that?
God, you know, it was so long ago, it's quite hard to remember some of the details. What I do remember is being terrified, because I will always put my hand on my heart and say, I am not a portrait artist. I don't draw real people. If someone asks me to draw them, I can do a rough approximation, but I'm not going to be able to do, you know, photorealistic renditions of someone. And so I remember at the beginning being a bit panicked, because I thought, oh God, they're going to need me to draw Paul McGann. And as far as I was concerned, it's obviously, like we said before, Paul McGann is the Eighth Doctor. It was kind of, the Doctor is in my head now, having, you know, spent so much time with the audio dramas, I don't necessarily see the actor, I see this character. So I remember saying to them, like, can I just try and do my kind of my rendition of him, but it's not going to be like this photorealistic version of the actor. And I know I was half convinced they were going to turn around and say, well, actually, that's not going to fly. But actually, they said, well, give it a go, see what you can do. And I'm so grateful looking back that they let me run with what I had in my head for him. And I think I knew I wanted him to be more Night of the Doctor style, because I think George had said when we were going in, we talked a lot in the lead up to it, and George had explained where our story was going to sit in that timeline, that what we were going to be exploring was someone who was a fair number of years after the movie, but this is someone who's sort of, he was about to become the sort of person who would drink what he did. You know, he had to make that decision of what he was going to do. And I think the Doctor who we saw in the film perhaps wasn't the person who would do that. So it was, we were sort of trying, we were definitely leaning closer towards Night of the Doctor than the film, and I wanted him to have that edge to him and that sort of, I mean, I love the design they went with that anyway. So yeah, much as I would have loved to draw a really fun, foppish adventure comic with the velvet and everything, would have been awesome. But for the time we were placing the story, he had to be, he was kind of in serious mode. I think we got to play with him at somewhere between. So he was sort of still on, ha ha, adventure. And then every now and then you'd get that flash of, ooh, a bit of a darker edge coming in, which I love in a character anyway.
How did you enjoy creating the look for a brand new companion in the form of Josie? And did you base her on anyone in particular?
No, again, I don't draw real people. So any of my character designs are never based on anyone, because if anything, if I try and base them on someone, it cripples me, because I struggle. I'll be like, oh no, I want to capture that. I have much more fun if I'm just plucking a character from my head, to be honest. So George was really open with the scripts, and Josie didn't have any description. Like, obviously I got to read the story, I knew her place in the story, I knew she was Welsh. That was pretty much the, that was what we had. And George was very much like, go with it, you know, go with what you want. So I was given a blank canvas for that, which was great. And I couldn't tell you why she ended up looking how she did, really. I don't know, she just sort of appeared, which is such a weird, wanky thing to say, but it's always a really nice sign when you're designing a character. If the writer has created someone who feels alive enough to you and the world feels alive enough, you don't need to think too hard about what the character's going to look like, because they're just sort of there, you know? And Josie was very much like that. And it was, yeah, oh God, getting to design a new, I mean, getting to draw the Doctor was amazing. Getting to design a new companion was probably more exciting.
I can totally understand that. How closely did you work with George whilst you were designing and drawing?
Yeah, pretty closely on the design work, because we were both really excited. So we weren't the jaded, bitter creators we are now. So I would, you know, if I did a sketch, I'd send it to him like, oh, what do you think of this? And then I remember doing my, obviously I didn't colour the comics themselves, but when I was doing the design work, I was doing the colours on those. And I remember the first time I knew I wanted to do with the undercut. And then when I did the two-tone design work and I sent that to him being like, how crazy is this? Do you think this would be all right? And he was like, oh, this is really cool. So yeah, we were quite excited. And I think, again, it was quite a long time ago now, but I think I drew the Doctor. I may have tried a few different outfits for him. I'm trying to remember, like maybe some variations, not a lot, just whether things were done up or loose, or I don't know. But yeah, certainly I remember a lot of communication is my memory of it. And then obviously once the scripts and the story were starting to come together, just being generally pretty excited about it.
For me, I think looking at it just now, I have my graphic novel version, paperback, not the hardback version.
Yeah, the hardback, there are not many of them around actually.
Oh, there's two in Forbidden Planet in Glasgow.
Are there? Oh wow.
If they're the collector's items, I'm picking them up.
As far as I know, I remember people saying to me, because I brought one of the hardbacks to a convention once, and people being like, where did you get hardbacks? I thought they were only American, the hardbacks. But then I know nothing.
I think the art in this is beautiful. And I think you gave the Doctor such a really romantic look. I think beautifully stylized and recognizably him. But the other thing that struck me is that with each part of the story having a distinct setting, was that a curse or a blessing, having to create a new world every time? Or would you rather have had an established continuity?
It was 100% curse, but only because of the nature of comic. Because I remember saying at the time, the schedule I had was the same as any comic schedule. So it was like an issue a month, doing an issue a month. So I'd get a script and you're straight in. You're designing as you draw, which this is not against Doctor Who or Titan, this is just comics in general, that when every issue is in a whole new world, like I love to build an environment. I'm quite a fan of kind of diving into an environment, looking at, well, what kind of produce do they have? What are they farming? So what materials would they get from that? Where would their clothing derive from? What kind of temperature? Like, I want to dive in and make a real immersive world, which is just not something I think people underestimate, especially with fantasy comics like that, when you're doing, yeah, literally a different world for every issue. There was no design time. There was no like, oh, hey, take some time and work out what this is going to look like. You're just like, script in, I'm kind of penciling and designing as I went, which I mean, I haven't looked back at those pages for a while. We're always learning. So whenever I look back at an old project, I'm always going to think, oh, I wish I could redo it. At the time, I think what I could achieve at the time, I was really happy with. It'll be really fun to revisit it just to see, you know, in the years since what we could apply now. But the biggest thing would have been, yeah, having a bit of time, because it was such a great, the environments George was setting up were so cool. And it was just so frustrating that I didn't have more time. I think what we did stands up, but it would be lovely to know what we could have done if we'd had that time to fully, you know, design every element of it. I remember having a lot of fun in the the spa setting of, like, we're trying to work out how to avoid any obvious nudity, but also, like, how many different races we could fit in different kinds of bathrobes and things. Also, I just really like spas, so it just made me kind of long for a spa break. But yeah, they were all really fun environments, and every environment they were in brought out something different in the story. So I would say, obviously, a blessing in terms of getting that experience, but a curse in that I just wished I'd had more time to deep dive into the design work.
Also, one other thing I meant to mention there was the lovely little Easter eggs that are in there. Like, there's a Cyberman here, there's an Ice Warrior there, there's a Croton here and there. I thought it was fantastic.
Excellent. I mean, a lot of them, I'm trying to remember, again, it was a while ago. I'm sure some of them, the Ice Giant, I think, was George. I'm pretty sure that was in the script. Yeah, it was a bit of a to and fro. It was fun, because some of the things he'd say, well, let's sneak a whatever, you know, something in here. And then other things I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna sneak something in here and surprise them. So yeah, I forget which ones now, but yeah, you can't do a comic like that and not throw in a few nods, really, can you?
Of course, there was a very positive reaction to the miniseries. How pleased were you when you heard the positive reaction? I mean, I believe Kenny has a couple of reviews to hand, actually.
Yep,
oh, gosh, really?
Yeah, the Casterbarus website said, bright and engaging, displays witty romantic charm. We've got Flickering Myth said, the artwork embraces the grand spirit of adventure and Who in general, this Doctor in particular. You'll find yourself returning time and time again. And we also got from Comic Buzz, there's plenty here to discover, and with art as strong as Viacelli's, it's an adventure well worth joining.
Oh, how nice is that? That's so cool. I can't tell you how relieved. The first thing was relief, I think, because there was no question in the stable of Titans Who artists. You know, they've got some incredible artists. And there was me, whose style was completely different. Like, I was coming from such a different angle on our comic. Way more cartoony, way more gestury. It could have gone both ways, you know, and I think there's absolutely going to be people out there who looked at that miniseries and were like, oh, that's not to my taste, and I would absolutely understand that, because it was quite a risk they took, because it is very different. But as one of those reviews said, I think what we were looking for was to capture that spirit of cartoonish adventure that the Eighth Doctor embodies, so I think it was the right choice. But that doesn't mean that when it was being released, I wasn't absolutely terrified to see how it would go down. And so as the sort of first positive responses started to come in, it was definitely relief, first of all, and then just, you know, elation that was like, oh, people like it, I'm so happy. And also one of the great things, even having got to that point and seeing it in print, I was still waiting for readers to turn around and say, she's not even drawing Paul McGann. Like, this doesn't even look like Paul McGann. I kept waiting for someone to call me up on, why doesn't it look like Paul McGann? And actually what it got was a lot of people saying, wow, it's amazing how much it makes me think of Paul McGann and how it embodies that. So I think I was probably being a bit harsher on myself than other people were being. So yeah, it was, yeah, absolute joy. I was so glad. And seeing people responding so well to Josie, you know, seeing, and I know she's cropped up in a couple of other Titan spin-offs now, and I've kind of had people send me panels where they're like, look, Josie's in this story, and that's like the biggest, you know, getting to see another artist take on your character and draw them, or a fan artist draw them, like, it's just amazing.
And finally, for those who want to find out a wee bit more about your work, where can they find your website?
So I do have emmavicelli.com, which is a very old website, which I really need to update more often. To be honest, these days, I mean, obviously you can go there and it's got links to everything, but I'm on Twitter more than anywhere these days. So just at emmavicelli on Twitter. I mean, all the usual places, you know, Instagram and stuff as well. But also I'd make a note to say, if you want to see if you want to have a read of something I'm working on for free at the moment, because I've got a few other things out that obviously you've got to go out and buy, which hopefully people might want to. I'm writing Life is Strange for Titan and drawing The Modern Frankenstein for Magma, but also myself and Malin Ryden co-create a title called Breaks, which is a basically queer positive mystery drama romance, which updates once a week on Mondays, and that's at breakscomic.com.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Our thanks to both George and Emma for their time, and we hope this has given you guys a new insight into the creative process. If you haven't bought A Master of Life and Death, you can order it at www.titan-comics.com, or you can order it in all good book and comic shops,
as they like to say on the radio.
Ta-da. Yeah.
Have to say, I really enjoy this one, Becca. I think it's beautifully illustrated. It's very distinct artwork from Emma. It's beautiful. The lines are clear and crisp. And McGann is just so vivid and he's so alive. Just, and it's especially his eyes. There's something about the way that she does them that just capture that energy.
Yes, her artwork is beautiful. I've seen a lot of her artwork around and I follow her on Twitter to see quite a lot of her doodles as well. And she is amazing. She is fantastic. And I hope we see more of her in the future.
Yes, she's definitely doing more Doctor Who. She's got a very distinctive style and it absolutely works perfectly, especially with this slightly more romantic sort of Doctor. I definitely agree. So that's the end of episode 2. We'll be back very soon with another episode of Pieces of Eighth, when we'll discuss the 2003 full cast short story Living Legend, when we'll be joined by a very special guest who was involved in its creation.
Ooh.
But until then, bye-bye.
Bye.